listening to The New Paris. I'm your host, Lindsay Tremuda. Which country has the best healthcare system? That's a question that is regularly tossed around, particularly as America's healthcare system looks more and more broken with every passing year. The stories of Americans putting off doctor's visits due to fees and the fear that a costly ailment will be discovered are so common they seem pulled directly from a dystopian novel. In comparison, experts look to the Australians, Brits, Dutch, Germans, Swiss, and French, of course, who have strong public health systems, some reliant on government and some on private insurers for their universal coverage. In France, public insurance covers between 70 and 80% of costs. Voluntary health insurance, which we call mutuelle, can cover the rest. It's the Ministry of Health that establishes funds and budgets and regulates everything from the number of hospital beds available to the price for procedures and medications. Over the last 5 to 6 years, I've seen more doctors and specialists for a variety of reasons than I ever have in my entire life. My out-of-pocket costs are relatively low, and my reimbursements come rather swiftly. What I can't speak to with firsthand experience, however, is what it's like navigating the French system with a life-threatening health issue. That's why I asked Robin Davis, an American journalist and TV producer currently working in an international organization in Paris, to join the show. She was diagnosed with breast cancer nearly 3 years ago. Today, she joins to talk about that experience, the quality of care she received throughout such a traumatic time, and how the French system really stacked up when she needed it the most. Robin, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So for our listeners, I'd love if you could start by telling us, you know, how you discovered that you were breast cancer positive.
Well, I discovered I was 34 years old, and I had been living in Paris about 2 years at that point. Just started a new job. Life was great. I was like, finally, I can like start my job. I can really, really settle in. And I went to my gynecologist and she felt a lump. She said, I'm sure it's nothing. Let's just go get it looked at. So I had a sonogram, a mammogram, a biopsy. And over the course of actually about 3 weeks, I found out that yes, it is breast cancer, which was shocking for me because I have no family history, and this was just not at all what I expected at that point in my life. And things moved very quickly from then. I was diagnosed June 25th. My doctor immediately put me in contact with a surgeon that she works with at the American Hospital, and my mastectomy was July 12th.
So let me ask you, you mentioned the American Hospital. For those listening who don't know, this is a hospital where the doctors aren't necessarily American, but they do speak English. Why is that where you opted to go?
I opted to go there because my gynecologist, who I loved and trusted, all the doctors that she recommended to me were there. My gynecologist is French. All the doctors that I've worked with at the American Hospital are French. And it's actually a bit of a misconception that everyone speaks English there because a lot of the people don't. So you do need to have some knowledge of French.
Okay, interesting. And how did you feel, you're going through this experience that's completely new to you. You're in France for only a couple of years. What did it feel like to have to, I guess, navigate your newfound illness and with individuals who, you know, may or may not be able to communicate with you in the way that you would experience in an English-speaking country?
It was terrifying. To be honest, it was terrifying. I'm American. I am a journalist. I am used to being able to speak my mind at any point in time and have people get what I'm trying to say. And sometimes I didn't get that. Sometimes there was a little bit of a miscommunication. So, and because I had only been living in France for a couple of years, I didn't have a large network of French friends to perhaps bring with me to kind of help me through all of it. I did have friends that came with me, but some of them, I mean, they were American as well. They didn't really know how everything worked. So it was incredibly difficult. But I will say that the people that took care of me there were amazing. They made it work. They really did.
At what point, what kind of I guess, miscommunications were there? Just to give people an idea of, you know, the ways that you need to be very precise or very clear with your, you know, expression of how you're feeling and what you're going through.
So I would say there were definitely a few miscommunications when dealing with my pain level, with dealing with the different side effects that I was getting from my treatment, particularly with the second time I was diagnosed with breast cancer and going through chemo and radiation. I felt that some of the members of my care team weren't taking things seriously. I'm not certain if that was, if I can just go ahead and say, oh yes, that was miscommunication, or was it something else? I'm not confident in saying one way or another, but it definitely happened.
And so you've already mentioned now that you actually were diagnosed twice. So what is the chronology of this? When you were diagnosed initially, was that before COVID?
Yes. So I was diagnosed in 2018.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. June 2018. And then I had my mastectomy in July. Actually, I was in the hospital while France was winning the World Cup. And then I went through I had reconstruction at the same time. Then I had a second surgery and they said, you know what? We said your margins were clear, but maybe they weren't. So we'll just take a look again for the second surgery. And it turned out I was declared cancer-free, but I was not actually cancer-free at that point.
And how much time had passed before, you know, between the initial surgery and them saying, actually, not clear?
Well, I was told in July, later in July, that the margins were close, but we think it's fine. You're cancer-free. No need to do chemo or radiation. And then when I was preparing for a lipofilling surgery, which is a surgery that many women get for reconstruction, where they just add fat from other areas to kind of pad out the implant, the doctor said, well, let's take another look at the tissue to see if the margins were really clear, because just to be safe. And that was in February. So from July to February. And it turned out that no, it was still, I still had cancer at that point.
And you mentioned reconstruction. Was this a single or double mastectomy?
It was a single mastectomy on the left side.
And, you know, I'm so curious about what the protocol would be between, or, you know, in the U.S., had you been diagnosed in the U.S., would it have been, how would it have been different?
Well, one thing for certain, I probably wouldn't have waited as long for my biopsy results. That wait was excruciating. Excruciating. I understand
you said it was, what, 3 weeks?
Yes. It was.
I mean, that's treacherous.
It is. And I mean, I know there are longer wait times now, especially with COVID. I know people are waiting for their results for a long time. But back in 2018, for me, that was unheard of. I was Googling. I was like, well, how long is everyone else taking to get their results? And people were getting it much quicker. So that annoyed me. But hey, I guess it all worked out in the end. But once I found out that I was not a lumpectomy candidate because the tumor was too large, I said, well, can I just get a double mastectomy then? I just want both of them gone. And the doctor said no. And I said, what? I mean, what do you mean no? Because for me, he said, well, the cancer doesn't jump from breast to breast, which may be true. However, there is a question of you'll always feel paranoid about the other breast. Mm-hmm. And there's a question of symmetry. You know, sure. We want to try to be as symmetrical as we were pre-cancer. But I was denied that option. And I know from the various breast cancer support groups I'm in that if your insurance in the U.S. approves it, you're allowed to get a double mastectomy if you ask. And most of the women, most of the survivors I know asked for their double and got their double. So that was.
So there's a level of conservatism that I think, and I would see that to be true even with the kinds of medications they prescribe for pain in France. Just as recently as last night around the dinner table, I was talking with a friend about who was in a very, very bad accident in France. And the pain, you know, when she went to the emergency room, the pain they gave her for, you know, something that honestly, I don't know how you could even sit with the level of injury that she had. They essentially gave her, you know, paracetamol or,
ibuprofen. I mean, nothing that really would take away any of the discomfort. So there's, you know, a very different approach to pain management here. What throughout this process, do you feel that, you know, there was some level of reassurance and confidence given that, you know, perhaps the cost of what you were going through was not going to be a source of stress in the way it might have been in the US? I mean, I'd love to, because I know there are going to be people thinking, goodness, what, you know, thank God she had a job, but also, you know, what would have happened in the US in a different job with this idea of, you know, insurance and insurance companies covering and not covering things. You know, what did that process for you look like? And I guess, was it a source of sort of reassurance that you're in a country that at least has, you know, a base level care, that you're not going to go, you know, bankrupt for your ordeal?
It was a great source of reassurance for me. At the time, my application for my Carte Vitale, which is the card for the French health insurance system, was still in process. So I was not able to use France's national health insurance for my mastectomy. At the time, I still had private insurance from being a master's student, so that was helpful. But the cost of my mastectomy was 27,000 euros. And this was at a private hospital, because that's where my doctors were and that's where I was referred. And that was covered by the private insurance to about, I had to pay about $1,500 out of pocket. Now, in the US, that same surgery costs about, it can average about $89,000, which is what I saw on the MD Anderson Cancer Center site.
That's, oh my God.
It's a lot.
And that's before insurance steps in.
That's before insurance steps in. Now, the thing also is that I was in the hospital for several days. And in the US, you get your mastectomy, you're released that day. You are sent home.
You're kidding me.
Yes. You are sent home with your drains to handle that and deal with that yourself. I was in the hospital for 5 days.
Right. So, and there was no sort of question of trying to get you out sooner than that.
Absolutely not. Right. No, I was.
You do hear that with pregnancy and delivery as well. Mm-hmm. You know, women stay in the hospital here longer.
It's true. Yeah. And I loved that, because dealing with your drains after a mastectomy is one of the hardest parts. And so the fact that I didn't have to deal with that, that I had my little morphine click button, I had a nurse call button, it really made things much easier for me than it could have been. Now, also, when I went through cancer the second time, I had to do chemo and radiation, and the costs of that are, the drugs that I had to take are so expensive in the US compared to France. There was an injection I had to get several times to generate your white blood cells called Neulasta. It's very popular if you look it up. And I went to the pharmacy down the street and they said, okay, well, it's 800 euros. Like, you need to like pay that now, because the way it works in France, you pay up front and then you get reimbursed. And I said, well, I can't pay 800 euros right now. Thankfully, they worked it out with my insurance to bill direct. Mm-hmm. But in the US, that costs, without insurance, $6,000.
I mean, this is what's absolutely bananas. I mean, you hear things like that, that, you know, this is also why people in France, you know, it, had you had your carte vitale at that point, mm-hmm. you know, they obviously would have taken a big chunk of that automatically, mm-hmm. And covered that automatically. Mm-hmm. The mutuelle, which you talked about, or I think we've talked about separately, is sort of a top-up insurance, right? That's what mm-hmm. you called it. And I think that's a good way of explaining it, because most French people or people living in France, rather, will get a mutuelle in order to cover whatever the national health system does not cover. So I'm wondering, do you know offhand, had you gone to the pharmacy that day with your carte vitale and a mutuelle, would you have needed to front much of anything?
I'm not sure, because there is a condition that you can have with your carte vitale called an ALD. And it's if you have a condition or an illness that takes place over a long period of time, they will cover you at 100% of what they can, to a limit. That is to a limit. So they probably would have covered a lot and I probably would not have had to pay up front. But one thing to know about that, and one thing that I didn't know, because you don't know what you don't know, is that sometimes when you see certain doctors, you having that ALD doesn't matter because they are considered higher than what France thinks they should be charging. So you're still only going to get a certain amount.
Right, right. And yeah, for people listening, there are, you know, when we go to a general practitioner for a consultation, generally what happens is you write a check. If they're sort of, as you say, in the system is sort of charging the recommended amount and they're not above that amount, it might cost, I don't know, 26 euros or something. You do write a check and then you do get reimbursed later. So there is, you know, it's not entirely like, you know, you're going to get care and not pulling out your wallet. Although there are times when you go to the pharmacy and, I mean, I know for my birth control, for example, I don't pay anything. It's taken care of directly through the Carte Vitale and the Mutuelle, and I don't have to, you know, to pay anything up front. But again, it has to do with your very particular coverage. But we're not getting into things like deductibles and all of these words that most Europeans don't understand at all.
In a way, it's less complicated here. But if you don't know the system, there is quite a learning curve. And it's something that I find very interesting, being someone that moved, an American that moved to France, there are handholders for if you want to get an apartment. There are handholders for if you want to get a job. There's handholders for if you want to get a visa. But if you have a major health issue and you have to navigate the French medical system, who's there to help you? No one has really, I guess, tapped into that market, which is a terrible thing to say, but I felt very alone the first time I had cancer because I just didn't know who to reach out to. And then some of the people that I did reach out to, they weren't very helpful at all. Thankfully.
Who were those people? Were they professionals? Were they?
Yes. There was one person in particular who worked with my Mutuelle at the time. And I told her that I was having financial issues because yes, that's still possible in France with the great health system, because you have to remember also salaries are much lower in France. I had tons of medical tests back to back to back. The reimbursements are not quick, especially if you have tests, multiple tests a week. So I was going through hardship and I said, I have all these surgeries and I've had so much. And she was like, well, why didn't you negotiate with the doctor? I said, I'm sorry, what? She said, why didn't you negotiate the price with your surgeon? And I didn't know that was a thing.
Right. Yeah. You don't know what you don't know.
Exactly. No. In the US, you would never negotiate a price with your surgeon. You would negotiate with your insurance. So there's quite a learning curve.
And so who did you have around you? I mean, I imagine for the second surgery you underwent, was it surgery or treatment?
So I've had a total of 4 surgeries, yes, all in France. And then the three surgeries were with my first bout with cancer and reconstruction. And the second one, the fourth one actually, I'm sorry, was to diagnose my recurrence, my cancer recurrence. Now, if I can just get into that a little bit, because that's a little interesting. I think that I had great care my first time with cancer, and I'm so happy that I was in France for it. But particularly my cancer recurrence, I am extremely happy that I was in France for it because I'm not certain that it would have been diagnosed as early in the US. And it's simply for the point of, I went to the doctor. I'd been told I was cancer-free for about over a year at that point. Went to the doctor just for a checkup, a physical. And she was doing a breast exam and she felt something in my armpit. And she was like, well, I'm sure it's fine because it's on the same side that your mastectomy was on. So, and they've already taken out lymph nodes from that side. So she's like, I'm sure it's fine, but let's just get it looked at. So I had a sonogram again, had a biopsy, which came back inconclusive. They said it's fine. Well, yes, they said it was fine. And I had a PET scan, which came back inconclusive. Now, these processes are very expensive. They're not cheap. A PET scan costs, at least at a private hospital, about 1,500 euros. And my surgeon just wasn't he wasn't convinced. He said, you know what, let's just open you up, take out whatever this, like, you know, this lymph node lump is, and then test it. Now,
do you have any idea why he was so unconvinced? It was just a gut feeling he had?
It might have been a gut feeling. I mean, he's an excellent doctor. So
fair enough.
So I trust his judgment. And obviously he was right. And after they operated, he came into the room and told me, and this was during COVID. This was in July of 2020, not a couple of months after we had gotten out of lockdown. And he was like, it's cancerous. This time it's more aggressive. You're going to have to do chemo. You're going to have to do radiation. And I was just in shock. But I say it wouldn't have happened in the U.S. because so many of my friends have told me, listen, insurance would have stopped you at a certain point because your insurance in the U.S. has to approve all these tests in the U.S. before you do them, whereas that's not the case here. So they said, oh, they would have stopped at the biopsy. Once the biopsy came back fine, your insurance in the U.S. would have said, no, we're not paying for a PET scan. No, we're not going to pay for a surgery to figure this out.
Right. So even if your surgeon in the U.S. was pretty insistent, or your oncologist or whatever, mm-hmm. Was insistent on taking it further, if you're someone who's not prepared to pay out of pocket for things that insurance won't cover, well, then what are you supposed to do? You just stop there. Okay. So interesting. You felt that was a situation where France sort of was more protective.
Yes, yes. They were more aggressive with the testing. And even in my follow-up care, they're very aggressive with making sure I get a lot of tests done, blood work, mammogram, sonogram, everything, every few months. And that is something that I love, because at least I'm not just sitting here worried like, oh, I haven't had a test in a while. Like, I wonder if something different is going on. You don't have to worry about that.
So who did you have around you? Because those are, you know, several surgeries, part of this happening during COVID, when I imagine your family can't come to mm-hmm. to see you. Who did you have around you?
Well, for my first bout of cancer pre-COVID, thankfully, my family did come from the U.S. The second time, it was difficult. I had a good group of friends, though. That's the thing. When you live outside of your home country, I think you find that your friends tend to become like family, because mm-hmm. we all, if they're also from outside their home country, they know what it's like to be here without your family. So I had a great group of friends who created a website, like a meal train, where they would just drop in, people would sign up. People sent me meals. I had an excellent friend who's a nurse and also a breast cancer survivor in France. And she would take me to my appointments, and she really would advocate for me when I felt like I just couldn't.
So I'm wondering, is that, I mean, we read about this constantly, and not just in the U.S., but where women in particular feel very disregarded, their pain is disregarded or brushed off or ignored, that it couldn't possibly be as bad as you're describing, regardless of the fact that, you know, everyone has a different tolerance to pain. But you know, you're trying to communicate mm-hmm. in the ways that you can how you're feeling through this process. Do you feel that was equally as much an issue as we know it to be in the U.S.?
Yes, it absolutely was as much of an issue. And particularly me being a Black woman, I find that, you know, there's that strong Black woman trope that I really despise. I'm a woman, not a racehorse. And people often are just, I had one nurse say to me as she was ripping my stitches out, like, well, it's not supposed to hurt that bad.
Not supposed to. Has she had stitches like that?
No, she has not. So it's oftentimes I felt that people didn't take my pain seriously at all. Like, I had a lot of different side effects that were perhaps not common. And I felt like I was very disregarded with the side effects. And I even had my friend that I aforementioned, the nurse friend, I had her call a member of my care team to say, hey, she is screaming and crying in pain. Like, can you help her, give her something else? And this was actually a reaction I had to my chemo drugs I was getting weekly. And the person that she was speaking to got upset that she called.
And not like, you.
Oh, well, yes, and not me. They said, oh, well, you need to call directly instead of having someone else. Well, listen, I am a single woman living in France without my family, and I'm screaming and crying in pain. Would you have had the same issue if I had a husband that called you? I don't think you would have.
Right, right.
No. So it was often, I often felt like my pain was disregarded. And that was one of the most difficult things for me.
And emotionally, I mean, you're going through physical pain, but then there's this emotional, you know, trauma that comes into play to complicate everything. And and how, I mean, through this, you know, you started this conversation saying that you had recently started a new job. So how did you navigate that, you know, having to be in and out of work, and how supportive were the people around you in a professional setting to this very, you know, very unexpected process you went through?
Well, it's funny. The first time I went through cancer, I didn't tell people at work because I had just gotten a new job and I had to go through a physical to start the job, which is apparently common in France, but I'd never heard of it in the US. So I was afraid that, okay, if they find out something's wrong with me, they'll take away my job contract, and then that will take away my visa, and that will take away my health insurance, and then I'll have nothing. I'll just have cancer and I'll have nothing. So I didn't tell anyone. I took off, I think, a week after my mastectomy. And even after I got out of the hospital, I received a meeting request from someone very high up. And I was like, oh, well, I should go because I'm new. I need to make an impression. Like, I need to, yes. So despite my parents' wishes, who were still in town, I went to the meeting. And no one actually cared that I showed up. And the person that I went there to impress wasn't even at the meeting. And I almost passed out on the way back home because I was just doing too much. Now, I don't regret not having told people the first time, because I do think me having just started that job, I didn't have much buy-in. Whereas, you know, they could have let me go after a year or something like that. I'm still working there, which is great. And I just don't think if they had known, and if I had been taking tons of medical leave, that it would have looked good, which is a terrible thing to say, but it's something you have to think about when your job is the basis for you living in France, which means it's the basis for you having health insurance. And when you are the only person that can pay all of these things, there's no one else I'm leaning on.
Right. So it's a bit of a different consideration than if you were a French citizen and, you know, also potentially as a French citizen, you know, maybe you have a better working understanding of your employee rights as well. You know, you're just starting this job. You don't know sort of, you're already thrown into a complete loop with this news about your health. So, you know, to also try to navigate a new job and understand what you can and can't ask for, or how you are protected or not protected. I mean, that's a whole bunch of new to handle at once.
It is. And then with the second time, I did tell them, by then they knew that I'd had cancer before. And then I told them, okay, it's back. I want to work on a reduced schedule while I go through chemotherapy, which some of my doctors were not happy with. They thought that I should just not work because it's very taxing on the body. You're extremely tired. And I said, well, you know, I'm going through, it's the pandemic. There's a lot of lockdowns. I don't just want to go to chemo and go home and sit by myself in my apartment and not do anything. I need something to keep my mind off of it. So work was a great thing to have at that time. So I reduced my hours a bit. And then I did take eventually full medical leave after I went through radiation, after I finished both chemo and radiation.
So today we are, you know, October 2021. You have been through an absolutely incredible ordeal. How do you feel today? And, you know, what is the prognosis of your illness?
Well, I'm feeling good. Well, maybe good's maybe an oversell. But, you know, I'm here. And according to my doctors, I'm healthy. I'm on hormone therapy now for 5 years, which has its own set of side effects. But, you know, it really feels good to be in France at this moment. I am very grateful to my doctors and just everyone that's helped me here. They say that after 5 years, you're considered to be in the clear. So I'm still going through that 5 years and hopefully everything will be great, but we'll see. We'll see what happens.
And so if you could, I don't know, offer some words of advice or recommendations to anyone who isn't French, for example, but living in France when they learn they have something, you know, quite serious they need to go through for their health, what would you offer them?
Well, there are a number of things that you should keep in mind. Definitely shop around when it comes to your doctors. I did do that, and I still settled on the first people that were recommended to me because I found that they were the best. But I would say just make sure you do your research. The first time I didn't do as much research because it just, everything scared me. And I just, they didn't give me much time. So, because I didn't know if I had much time. So everything moved very fast. But I would say if you can, do your research, reach out, try to find other people that are going through what you've gone through, whether it's through Facebook groups or whatever. I mean, hey, reach out to me if you need to, if you need help navigating the French medical system. Make friends at your pharmacy, which my
good one. Yes.
My pharmacy was incredible. I was sick from one of my chemo meds and I had a friend call them and they brought me my meds and said, just pay next time you're in, because they knew me and they knew what I was going through. So all these different things, they can really help you a lot. Get to know someone at your mutuelle very well so that you can get all your reimbursements as quick as possible and make sure you know what you're going to get back.
Mm. So there's a lot of homework and research that's required. But I mean, thank goodness we also have these online support groups and people who have been through it, and you can find them perhaps more easily than you might have been able to, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. Robin, what a process. Thank you so much for sharing this story, because I think it is so important to know how to advocate for your health, but even more so when you're in a country that isn't your original home and in a system you don't navigate as perfectly. So, and of course, all listeners, I'm sure, are going to be wishing you well and grateful for this advice and this, you know, these anecdotes that could potentially save someone else. So Robin, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
That's the show for today. As always, thank you for listening, subscribing, and sharing with friends. You can find all previous episodes of the New Paris podcast wherever you stream your podcasts and on World Radio Paris. If you're enjoying these conversations, please consider picking up a copy of the New Paris book or my recent release, The New Parisienne, from your local booksellers. Until next time, à bientôt.